Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Yeah, this is an interesting point. E-bikes have facilitated more and more people to get out on mountain bikes into the countryside. So I think we're going to be seeing different pressures on land use to what we were before.
Hello and welcome to this week's Single Track World podcast, and this week it's a bit of a special edition because I'm joined by the new project manager for the UK Trails Project, who is Dave Evans. Hi Dave.
Good morning Hannah, thank you very much for inviting me on to talk to you so early in this project. It's very exciting.
Yeah, well hopefully it is. It seems like a great opportunity for mountain bikers in the UK, and for those that maybe you haven't been reading the front page of our website, because I just don't know why you wouldn't do that. Would you like to give us a bit of an overview of what the UK Trails Project actually is?
Yes, certainly. The UK Trails Project is a 3-year project to look at the landscape of what people are actually riding across the UK. And we're going to look at that on a very sort of macroscopic level, though almost on a postcode level. And we're inviting people to tell us about their trails, what they ride, where they ride it, and to highlight the success stories that have come out of their areas. That could include whether the trails have produced people who've gone on to be athletes on the world stage, or that it means a lot to them because they get out in the evening with their friends from their doorstep. And the key thing we're looking to do with this project is to pull out those success stories and also those barriers to success, to look at how people have tried to manage those trails and keep them sustainable. And we can take those messages and move forwards to help people across the UK. But what makes this project different to things that have gone before it is that we're also sitting down with landowners. So we've got a number of landowners on the project steering group who we are asking questions of across the UK to see what they have found with mountain biking, what have been the benefits to them, and what have been the barriers to progress, be it through the constraints that they have to impose through their forest operations or other areas such as treble SIs, protecting the landscape, and so on and so forth.
Okay. I think you've been in the job about 8 days at this point. Let's fast forward 3 years. What are you hoping there will be in this world at the end of 3 years that isn't there now?
3 years is a long time in the project. So the project's going to be driven by the report we are writing in the first phase between now and June next year, which is called Right Trail, Right Place, Right Time, Right People. So that report will tell the story of what riders are riding, how they have tried to manage their trails, and also tell the story from the landowner's point of view to what is a success and what is a constraint. So we're going to be able to pull out a nationwide picture of what people are riding, how they're doing it, and also where people are finding trouble and difficulty, And we're also going to ask the landowner the same question. So I imagine we're going to see a number of issues coming out from the rider's side and perhaps a number of issues coming out from the landowner's side. And when we sit down and put those together, we'll suddenly see, hang on a moment, there's commonality here. And we can then sit down for the ways to work forwards. Now, those ways forwards may be existing around the country in little hotspots. So we're really keen to tell the story and listen to people who have got success stories to tell us and then take those forwards as case studies so we can share best practice and get those examples out across the country, but also on the desk of the landowners who, because of the regionalisation of a lot of their work, they may not know that there's a way forwards, but this being used in another region. So 3 years is a long time, but at the end of that, it would be nice to see some kind of toolbox, some kind of list of resources that landowners are happy with and riders can dip into to help move their management of their local trails forward.
Okay, so you're not setting out at this point in time what those tools might look like. You're going out, first of all, to consult with riders and see what their issues are and see what the landowners' issues are. And then hopefully from that, you'll say, we need these tools. That's what the project is. What is the project not? Because I think the first thing that springs to everyone's mind is, well, just let us ride on the trails that are already there.
Well, the trails that already are there will form a backbone of this project. The trails that are already there have, by and large, existed for donkey's years, but there's been an explosion in rider-built trails on the urban fringes during the COVID pandemic. So there's a huge amount of infrastructure that riders have built, and as riders have built it, I think it's reasonable to say that's what riders want to ride. So we're going to be looking at that infrastructure and what management models can be applied to that to make that into a sustainable resource. And I'd also expect to see regional variations. So some areas may have a lot more bridleways and rights of way where people are looking to gain greater access. I imagine that will pop up. And I imagine better access and better ways to facilitate riders building what they want in the larger state forests will also pop up. But it's too early to say that yet. And that's why we're going on a nationwide approach, using a geosurvey technique, so we can see what the patterns are and where different types of work will be necessary.
Okay, so you're not kind of making the legislative kind of right to roam stuff, right to ride on footpaths. That's not your primary focus here. You're more about the trails that are built for mountain biking on. Is that right?
That's where I expect to see the largest amount of replies coming from. Rights of way is a well-recognised issue, and Cycling UK have said they're going to make that their one of their leading factors that they're campaigning for. I don't see any point in duplicating effort where we have very capable people working on that sector. And also my background is working in both the land management side and as a director of a trail association on rider-built trails. So that's where my area of expertise lies. I'm keen to provide as much expertise as I can from my knowledge background.
Okay. So the first stage of this consultation, first stage, is a tour of the country. You're going to have actual meetings. What you're saying is that these initial meetings are so that when you send the digital online questionnaire out to everybody, you're actually asking the right questions and it's structured in the right way, and you don't just get a load of responses going, well, this didn't ask the question that I wanted to answer, kind of thing. There's a few questions on my story about why are you meeting in the places that you're meeting. So have those locations been chosen because they give you a particular spread of types of riding or types of known issue or landscape or population? How did you decide where you're going?
We're looking to get a sort of snapshot of around the country of urban, suburban, rural riding. And we're also looking to hit as many people as we possibly can to workshop those questions with. I would absolutely love to spend 4 months traveling the country, carrying on with these workshops. But it's going into 2 months already, and there simply isn't the time and resource for me to go and workshop with everybody. So that's why we're going to be putting the questionnaire out online, and then that way which will be available to everybody to complete. We will also be running online workshops. So sorry to those who we've not been able to get around, but you're very welcome to join us on an online workshop, which will be announced shortly. And we'll go through the same process with you there.
That sounds really useful, because I can imagine that riders will have different experiences and different problems depending on whether they're dealing with Forestry England or a national park or lots of farmland. Like they'll have very different kind of conflicts of use and that kind of stuff.
Very much so. And again, that brings us back to why we're doing this as a geographical project. Once we get that into a geographical database, we can start pulling out maps, we can start color coding issues, and then we can look at the patterns that are building up across the UK, and that will tell us where we need to speak to landowners, where we need to perhaps bring in experts on or people who are already advocating for greater access. And we can look at what direction this particular project is going to take once we've seen that what the issues are on a region-by-region basis.
Okay, and what about those people who are a bit nervous about telling people where their trails are? Because, again, I can see that landowners might take a little bit of a, well, if we don't officially know about it, we can kind of ignore it. But if it starts being reported on a piece of paper, then maybe they feel like they need to do something about it.
Yes, I completely share riders' concerns about sharing trails that they may not wish to share. But we're looking very much at the UK on drawing a circle around your postcode level. I'm not interested in every line. I'm not interested in every dot in the forest. So, but if riders want to tell us that in postcode SY20, for instance, I like to ride from the house, I go along a bridleway, across a bit of farmland, and I go through some trails in the woods that I'm not sure about the origin of, then that's absolutely fine. We're not going to be giving away anybody's secrets there. And if people aren't comfortable in putting even postcode level of data, and I'm only talking the first part of the postcode, then they can select county level. So we can be as obscure as people feel comfortable with. But we can also zoom in where people are more comfortable in telling us a good story or highlighting a specific issue. So it's up to the rider. Tell us as much or as little as you want and be as discreet or as specific as you want.
Okay. Now, this is not the first time that there has been a questionnaire or a survey about what riders want. And in particular, there was a big one done in 2016 by the now defunct OpenMTB and Cycling UK. So why do we need another survey now?
Right. This one is very different to the previous survey because it captures not just what riders want, but what riders have done. So I think the landscape of mountain biking has changed significantly since 2016, particularly in terms of rider-built trails on the urban fringes that was brought about by the COVID lockdowns. And we're asking people to tell their story. Now, what's going on in your woods? We're talking about the wood, not the rider. We're talking about the community, not the individual. And we're capturing what people are actually doing, what they've been doing for the last 8 years. What does this look like? What are your success stories and what are your barriers to progress? And once we see those successes we can highlight and those barriers that we can summarize, we can sit down with the landowners, look at the story from their point of view, which again is new to this survey, and hopefully find some pathways forward. The Cycling UK survey was very interesting because it seems that 79% of people enjoy riding single tracks, 63% enjoy technical trails, and Forestry Commission land was the most common riding venue highlighted at that time. And also, this was back in 2016, two-thirds of people were riding from the door, and 42% were saying they'd have to drive over an hour to get to a trail centre. I think there's going to be an upshift in people riding from the door recently, particularly due to there being a greater range and also increased in travel costs that may make driving the bike in the car less desirable. Most interestingly, even in 2016, most people surveyed, about a third, said they'd like to get involved in trail building. Well, lockdown gave them the opportunity to do that, and now we can look at the results and see what they actually got out and did.
Mm. Okay, so this survey might actually build on some of that previous data and show us some trends as well, rather than giving us a snapshot.
Very much so. You can always, every time you take a survey, it's always interesting to cast back and look at previous surveys to see where the trends are going, what that's pointing towards for the shape of the sport and scene. And again, we will be asking people, what do you see as being missing from your local trail offering? Where do you think we need to go next? And, it will guide the future. And it's always interesting to see if what people indicated as being what they want actually emerges. So it'll be interesting to look back at what people have, say they have done in this survey compared with what people said they wanted in 2016 and see if the two things are actually the same.
And another big development, I think, since 2016 is that e-bikes have become much more commonplace since then. So are you envisaging any particular trends or issues around e-bikes, or do they bring anything to the access party that's different?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. E-bikes have facilitated more and more people to get out on mountain bikes into the countryside. So I think we're going to be seeing different pressures on land use to what we were before. And I think we're going to be seeing a different pattern of riding to what we were seeing before, because peak riders may be more concerned by their range anxiety and wishing to stay closer to a central point. It will be interesting for them to tell their story. I'm not sure how that's going to fit in the landscape yet, and we will try and capture it.
Okay. And you have previously in your past life or possibly the life that has led you to the where you are now, you've written about how wild trails can inform trail centre design in future. I think that's quite interesting. So since you're here, would you like to just sort of summarise what you were kind of saying was your theory?
So for those who don't know me, I formerly ran Bike Chorus. That was a guiding company that transitioned into a lot of consultancy work on wild trails during the lockdown periods. Whilst I was surveying the wild trails, I noticed that most of the wild trail hotspots were built around what you could call a ski piece model. Now, that is a track up the middle, which may be a gentle forest track or a blooming steep fire break in the areas where e-bikes were more popular, going to the top of a hill. And from the top of the hill, several trails branched off and ran down the hill, crossing the fire roads at multiple points. So this gave the opportunity for groups of riders to ride together and choose trails of different technicalities for each run down the hill. And it meant groups of multiple abilities could ride together. And someone would say, oh, I'm going to go and try the harder one. Oh, I don't fancy that tonight. Who wants to come down the easier one with me? So it brought together a lot more people. So back with my guiding hat on, particularly when running youth sessions, I found this model especially good for developing younger and less experienced riders, because you could go up the hill, warm up on a more gentle trail, back up the hill, put down something a little bit more technical, and so on and so forth. So it works a lot better with that kind of group developing their ability than the traditional trail centre model, which is very linear. You have to do your 10, 20, 30 kilometre route. And it's not always possible to loop back and repeat a section of single track you particularly enjoy.
You've got no idea where you are in half of these places. Like, you keep pedalling and you're like, I'm in a forest of conifers. They all look the same. I have no idea which way is back to base. Like, I've had enough at this point and I've still got to keep following the red dots, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. It's having the all the trails in the centre shown on the same map would be an enormously easy and successful way to start, because riders can then mix it up a bit. Rather than just doing a route which is prescribed to them, they can go and explore. And people like that kind of feel of exploration. They like the sort of discussion, well, we've tried that, let's try this one, let's go that one. And it's handing back a lot of the sort of responsibility and decision-making to the rider, which I've certainly found they enjoy. So I think there's a good opportunity for our existing trail centres to have a look at that model and think about how they might want to rejig things, move things around a bit, and particularly at the lower technical grade, where riders still enjoy that sort of hand-holding of a sign, hand-holding of a map, and they certainly need a good cafe and a play area is a godsend if you're going there with kids. Mm-hmm. So I think trail centres could be perhaps reimagined to offer those stepping stones for riders coming up through the sport with the comfort of a map, the comfort of a cafe and a nice car park, and sort of be used to build up their confidence and their sort of exploration skills.
Yeah, so you don't have to commit to the 35-mile loop of whatever. You can just know that this trail is going to be of this sort of grade, and you can either do another lap of it or you can go and pick another one that's the same colour, but you don't have to disappear off into the wild for a day.
Precisely. If you look at the forestry descriptions of what a red trail is, it says it's for an advanced mountain biker with a good level of fitness. And straight away, you've got two barriers of entry to the sport there. And if they could be rearranged, so you're looking for bringing riders onto the tracks in a more gradual way, where they can do as little or as much as they feel like, I think that would allow people to build up at their own pace and develop their skills in a more comfortable and friendly environment.
Kind of separating the fitness from the skills, because some of the red trails are only hard because they go on for miles rather than because they've got huge drops in or big rocks or whatever, isn't it?
Precisely. The older system tended to increase the grade in accordance with distance, whereas there may not have been that much more technicality in the actual terrain.
Now, of course, trail centres are one of those key resources for people that don't necessarily have trails on their doorstep, and they've got no choice but to get in the car or on the train or whatever and get out there to a trail centre. So often a trail centre is the first experience that somebody has of mountain biking. So your survey so far sounds like it's more about people who are already riding and know what they want. Will you be trying to capture those people who are kind of frustrated mountain bikers? You know, maybe they'd quite like to mountain bike some more, but they don't really know where to start.
Yes, we'd love to get the survey out as widely as possible to capture those people who maybe, let's say, for example, may cycle to the work, they may be going along a towpath or whatever, and thinking, actually, you know, I'd like to do a bit more of this type of thing, but I don't know where to start. So, or I've seen these people riding the woods, it all looks a bit hard for me. I'd love to find something a bit more at my level. So, yes, we're getting that survey out nationwide and across as many audiences as we can. There's as wide a sharing as possible. We'd like to capture that market and see where the gap in resource is. I would imagine a lot of the trails that riders have built have been built by the keenest and therefore most experienced riders. So they're probably going to be quite top heavy in terms of technical ability. But I imagine also that the type of trail that a lot of people want to ride may sit a little bit below that in terms of technicality. So more people can enjoy riding without having to be at the very, very top end of the ability scale. Again, we're getting that survey out there as far as we can. We can see what people are telling us.
And I guess one of the things you might discover from this is where the riding deserts are as well. I mean, you might expect central London or Birmingham to be a mountain biking desert, but we have got this growth in urban mountain biking, kind of golf courses turned into mountain bike opportunities. So just because it's a city doesn't mean that you can't have some kind of mountain biking.
Now, that's an area that absolutely fascinates me, because I live in one of the sparsest areas of population in the UK, where people come to every weekend to come mountain biking. And I will absolutely love to know what people are doing in the inner cities, on the urban fringes, and what projects have been happening there, and to hear those success stories so we can, again, get that message out. We looked at a project in Switzerland not so long ago, where exactly an old football pitch had been turned into a bike facility. And they managed to incorporate everything from a small kid's pump track to massive jumps for skills jump riders and a sort of flow trail through the middle of it. It's amazing what you can do with a small piece of land. So I'd love to capture those so we can pull those out as case studies and see what has been done.
Sure. Okay, so if people that are listening to this know kids or kids that dig or that kind of young group that probably isn't quite as likely to turn up to a meeting about trails or a workshop about trails or fill in a questionnaire, I think you'd quite like to hear from those people as well, wouldn't you?
Very much so. The kids are the future of the sport. The uptake and the ability that we've seen around here through the youth programs that we've run over the past 3 years has been absolutely astonishing. And I think that's the case across the UK. So we are going to be reaching out to the younger audience when the survey goes online through a number of influencers and contacts that Scottish Cycling has with social medias. And I'd also ask adults who are coming along to have a think, you know, think about not just what you're riding, what's going on, think about what the kids are riding. You may have teenagers who ride with you. You may have teenagers of your own. Ask them before you come along, even if they're not going to be up for a meeting that's lengthy. It would be lovely to try and capture some of their thoughts in the process as well.
Okay, well, we've talked a lot about riders. What about the landowners? You're going to have some meetings with them. So what kind of landowners are you going to be talking to?
So we're reaching out to a wide range of landowners. We're starting with the big forest landowners, Forestry Land Scotland, Forestry England, and Natural Resources, as they make up a significant proportion of the land within the UK. We're also reaching out to smaller and less known landowners, such as utility companies, councils, and we're looking also towards the National Trust, Woodland Trust, and private estates. Private estates could range from anything from a small farmer who's got 20 acres on the edge of a town to larger estates going across the country. My colleagues in the Aberdeenshire region of Scottish Cycling met with Balmoral Estate Office last week and had a positive response from them. So we will be inviting people from all levels, from the smallest forest to the king, to the table to see what they think.
Well, if the king's on board, you'd hope that all the other landed gentry might be prepared to follow suit. Yeah, surely that's how it works.
I'd like to think so. We've all seen the video of the king having a nice chat with some riders on his estate,
yeah.
And I do hope that the other gentry will take his example and lead forward. But there we go. We're up for discussion with them, and we want to learn more. We're here to listen. We're not here to campaign. We want to know. What are their boundaries? You know, there will be set hard limits for how they expect people to behave while on their land. They also have their primary industry. A tree is a crop at the end of the day, and they have to work with and tend and harvest that crop. So we are going there with very much a listening hat on to say, what are your constraints? What are your concerns? And then also, what have your success stories been? And how can having mountain bikers on your land be a positive benefit to you? And how can we fit in around your constraints and your processes so we have mutual benefit for both parties?
Now, on that, one of the kind of obvious frustrations that mountain bikers and trail associations are having at the moment is that Forestry England is one organisation with apparently very different approaches to wild trails, depending on where you are in the country. You see that as being something that you might be able to standardise, hopefully to the benefit of riders rather than the worst possible outcome?
I would love to see the standardisation of process across regions with large landowners such as Forestry England and NRW. The story of we have got so far with a large landowner and then faced the barrier to progress through changing people, changing opinion or whatever, I think is going to be a very common theme coming out of this research. And by sitting down at the table with the right people in those organisations, I hope that we can find simple and replicable pathways through their systems so that the huge number of hours that volunteers are putting in the mountain bike sector can actually complete and go through the whole system to have a positive outcome, rather than getting so far and then hitting a stumbling block or being at the mercy of changing policy and changing personnel. So I think that's a crucial part. So we're really wanting to hear, and especially I hate to say this, some of your negative stories and what have, if you've put in a lot of effort and you said, oh no, we've got this far, then it all stops. That's the crucial things we need to hear, because once we build up those patterns of how far did you get, why did it stop, what was the barrier there? We're going to be able to take that away and sit down with the landowners and say, right, well, what's happening here? How can we get that through?
Okay, so there are some obvious good examples of trail building guidance in Scotland, thanks to Dimbins. And the stuff there that I think any trail builder can see is sensible, like not crossing footpaths and bridleways at high speed with blind entries and that kind of thing. Do you envisage there being similar sort of memorandums of understanding guidance for landowners, like send your subcontractors to trash the trail that we've agreed can be there and that kind of thing?
I would love to see trails go into work plans with the appropriate level of protection applied to them. But there's also going to have to be a sort of understanding between the mountain bike community and the landowners that not every trail can be saved. And in some cases, it might be down to the mountain bike community to accept that you could have X number of trails in a particular woodland. But some of those trails, if they're in an area of forest that's due for harvesting in a few years, it might be better to say, right, we're going to work on these trails to an end-of-life program. And if they've been ridden so much, they're rutted and washed out, you know, it might be better to say, okay, that one goes. But flipping it the other way around, where you've got regions of forest that are going into long-term management, we can focus our efforts, focus our volunteer hours into making some trails in that area that really can stand the test of time and hopefully be there for future generations. But it's, again, it's getting around the table with those landowners and understanding their constraints, and where that we can understand where it's sensible to put in the bulk of volunteer time and where we accept that some things come, some things go.
Right. Okay. But predominantly the toolkit will be aimed at riders and how to interact with a landowner rather than it being a how landowners should approach mountain biking on their land. Is that what you think?
It's going to work both ways. So I think the toolkit, memorandum of understanding, the advice, whatever we call that as the project output, would contain a list of resources for both mountain bike groups to dip into and apply to reduce the amount of effort they're putting in, and also a sort of use list of suggestions for a landowner who's coming to the table saying, if we're going to do this much work in your favour, we expect a certain sort of behaviours coming back. That will vary, and I think, yeah, getting that across the table is will still vary region on region, job by job. It depends how jobs are priced, depends how jobs are managed. It depends on so many, many things in, for example, forestry that I'm not fully aware of yet. But again, sitting down, we'll get that out of people and be able to understand their constraints a little more fully.
Yeah, I think just having landowners be able, one landowner be able to see that another landowner has accepted a certain level of activity or risk and found that to be, you know, not threatening to their very existence will be quite useful, particularly when it's a big landowner or someone with commonalities like local authorities, for example. It kind of removes it from that individual officer's like decision to a more collective, like, oh, that's cool, we can be fine with this.
Yes, I certainly hope that when we pull out the case studies from landowners' examples of best practice, I hope this report will reassure landowners who may be thinking in the earlier days of health and safety, where they fear that they're responsible for absolutely everything that goes on their land to absolutely everybody. And by showing them examples of how other landowners have either delegated that risk or managed to manage it in a proactive way, then we can set out those examples as good case studies for other landowners to follow. And I hope that would reassure them that they can accept these things going on and it won't keep them up at night.
Okay, so we've got the first part happening, which is the workshops in person, which are from now through till early January.
Correct.
You said there's going to be some online workshops as well. When are they?
They're going to be mid-January as well. So there'll be a number of online workshops. You'll be able to reserve a space on those through Eventbrite. They'll be announced in the forthcoming weeks. And then after we've done those workshops, that will shape the style and the questions in the online survey. And I hope to see that going live by late January.
Okay. And then presumably there's going to be some kind of analysis of those results. And then from those, are you going to look at the case studies and put those out there with the analysis? Or are you going to put the analysis out and then go and get the case studies?
It's all going to come out together. So we're looking to produce a far-reaching report. It will come out in about 20, 30-page document, and that will be produced by Napier University, who have the facilities and the academic ability to sit down and analyse a UK-wide study. The report will look at things we've highlighted from the rider's point of view. We'll look at patterns both on a national and regional scale, and we'll summarise what is going on across the country. We'll also do the same from a landowner's point of view. So if you can imagine a map of the UK with different regions with different sort of coloured blobs in it, that'll show us where we're having the same issues across the country. And also it'll show us where issues are more regionalised. And again, we'll pull out lists of commonalities of constraints, concerns from the landowners. And then the report will also include case studies where these constraints have been met, these concerns have been met, and riders have got a good result from it that's been to the benefit of the riding community and the landowner. And that's going to come out all together as one report. And there's also going to be press releases at a sort of lower, less complex level, so people can enjoy reading them, and hopefully it will be inspiring to the mountain bike community moving forwards. Provisionally, that's penciled in for June next year.
Okay, well, in that case, I shall book you in for another podcast around then, I reckon. You can tell
us
all about
it. I'd love to speak to you then. I hope to have a lovely report for you to read and some really good shiny examples of how people have got things going and got things moving for their local area.
Great, and so then that should set the agenda for the next phase, which will be some kind of toolkit development. Yep.
Precisely. Again, we'll see what the report tells us, see where it's going to be going. And we'll also see if we can bring in other partners. So if certain areas are highlighting, again, the access issue, looking at footpaths, bridleways and so on, Scottish Cycling has good contacts with other partners in the industry. And we can sit down with them and say, hey, you know, what are you doing with this? What are you doing with that? And it'll shape as to who's doing what moving forward. So we can focus our expertise on the elements of the report we feel best placed to move forwards. And we can provide the information that people have given us to other bodies within the cycling community to give them more information to help their work as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time today. And I'll probably speak to you at some point before June, I imagine, because I should definitely get myself to a workshop at least. So.
Thank you very much for the invitation. And I look forward to seeing you with you at the workshop and telling you more in future.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye for now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.